I'm Frank Vaughn. It's May 18th, 2026, a holiday. I don't really want to discuss which holiday because this country is still celebrating a monarch. Because, at the end of the day, we are still a constitutional monarchy. Our fundamental human rights can be taken away at a whim. We are governed by a king and his representative through the Governor General. And Mark Carney, who has a very close relationship with the monarchy. We are not a free country. We are not a democracy. We are a constitutional monarchy. And today just serves as a reminder of that. But I don't want to wax too poetic about that today. I just want to jump right in. This article, it's going to circle back around to Canada, but parents sent to prison after isolating kids for 4 years over COVID fears. The extreme measures resulted in severe developmental and physical harm to the three children. No doubt it did. No doubt. The constant masking, no doubt the constant isolation, made for speech impediments, made for developmental delays. But we're jailing these people for something. I should say, I believe this was in Spain. A court in northern Spain has sentenced a couple to prison after they kept their three children confined indoors for nearly 4 years. So we're putting them in jail. We're breaking up the family for an activity. I'm not trying to whitewash what they did. I think it's wrong. But COVID broke a lot of people. The other day, as I sit here, I haven't been making videos, but man, I'm still immersed in this. I decided to look up COVID is airborne on X, and you can still find accounts out there talking about COVID as an imminent threat. It's pretty wild. This kind of activity 3-4 years ago would have been celebrated as brave, keeping your children safe, masking them all the time, lining them up for the medical experiment. The people who didn't participate in the medical experiment were smart. Those who were coerced into it because they couldn't eat or they wouldn't be able to work or they wouldn't be able to do their jobs, and so they decided to take the risk and they took it, they should be compensated for the risk that they took. And those of us who actually avoided it, we should be celebrated as visionaries for understanding that if you skip all the regulatory and safety hurdles and you give pharmaceutical companies carte blanche immunity from any responsibility for harm that they cause, it's not a good idea to participate in whatever product they decide to roll out. Absolutely terrible chapter in human history. But are these parents fully responsible? I mean, in a way they are. But at the same time, not a single official who recommended these things has gone to jail. No one's ever been prosecuted. We had a prime minister that actually questioned whether or not I and people like me should be tolerated. Whether we should be able to survive. We had Doug Ford threatening to go door to door to get needles and arms, forcing you into compliance. Did any of them face any responsibility? They broke millions of people mentally, just like these parents here. These people are not alone in isolation. They're just the tip of the iceberg. It blows my mind. And what else is going on? Heart failure rising among younger Canadians. Data shows this cardiologist explains why. So this is a whitewashing article. Young people don't have heart attacks and die in great numbers. But all of a sudden, there's a spike. And that spike is concurrent 3 to 4 years after the rollout of something that Health Canada knew, officials knew, about mRNA heart risks before rollout. As heart failure rises in young Canadians, Health Canada knew the risks. They knew it, and they rolled it out anyway, and in fact, ordered millions upon millions of doses. A trip down memory lane, Trudeau announced his plan to purchase 76 million doses of Canadian-made C-19 vaccine. PM says rapid tests are being deployed. This is October 23rd of 2020. At this stage in the game, it was relatively clear that C-19 was not a major threat to human life. Sure, it could lead to the fatality and deaths of the elderly, but so could a flu, and so could a common cold, and so could pneumonia, because as you age, whether you like it or not, your immune system is in decline. This is what we were doing at the time, but it got even worse. Check this out. This is in May of 2021. Canada has ordered more than 400 million vaccine shots. Here's the progress report. They call this progress. This is CBC. This is the liberal news media. 6 months into vaccination campaigns, some companies have delivered, while others are a work in progress. What do we need? Remember, they've been rolling out different vaccinations and booster shots this entire time. Why did we need 400 million shots in a country that has 40 million people? Where did all these shots go? I don't know the answer. All I know is that now nobody's taking them. Now nobody cares. Everybody's moved on. But all of these things happened. And back to those parents, an enormous amount of pressure was applied to those parents by the state and by governments, enough that many of the weak minds among us, we can't all be equal, their minds broke and they reacted and they're still reacting today. There are still people out there masking every single day. And since we're talking about Canada, this one seemed to fly below the radar. Toronto woman who wants to die says federal government MAID committee isn't listening. Critics worry Canada's assisted dying committee is failing to meet its mandate. So here we have a disaffected, childless 49-year-old woman who just is desperate to die. Claire Elise Brousseau says it's critical the Special Joint Committee on Medical Assistance and Dying hear from the people directly impacted by the legislation. I don't understand how they can just build this policy about us without us. And the top headline. I mean, first off, they warn us that it references self-deletion. But, like, why would you warn people about referencing self-deletion in a country where 1 in 20 deaths are now from self-deletion? It's insane. And read this, just the top line. Claire Elise Brousseau has been waiting years for the Canadian government to let her die. As if the government has to approve your self-deletion. I mean, back in World War I, it was still common for German officers to take their own lives when they had fallen into a state of dishonor. Roman soldiers used to fall on their swords. It's not like this hasn't been done without government before. But it's just, I mean, this is a person, and this is the other thing. I wake up in the morning, and the minute I open my eyes, I feel just a sense of dread and panic. And so you go through this, and it's talking about a clear-cut case of depression, a lack of ability to move forward, and we're promoting that this state, which is clearly depression, clearly mental illness. There is nothing physically wrong here. This is a healthy person who probably just needs help. Maybe not the kind of help we're giving people, because in this country we've banned certain treatments and certain therapies. We've taken a bad view of tough love. I don't understand how you could, as a healthy human being, how you couldn't just ask yourself how you could be a service to the world, how you could make things better, who you could help, what you could do with your time left. Instead of saying, I just want to off myself, why don't you get out there, volunteer, help some kids. You know, like, build a better future, dedicate yourself to something greater. I think that's what people need. They need purpose. So she wakes up in the morning, and the minute she opens her eyes, she feels a sense of dread and panic. And then the article says, it's why the Toronto woman wants to end her life. But under current Canadian legislation, she's not eligible for medical assistance in dying because she only suffers from mental illnesses. Next year, that's supposed to change, though the federal government has already delayed twice. So you're already suffering from mental illness. You already might be in a compromised state where you can't make full good decisions for yourself. We used to call this someone who needs help, not somebody who should be encouraged down the road of mental illness. But this goes into the gender nonsense. This goes into all the fantasies that we deploy in society and insist that people must respect as real. We'll get into that a little bit next. But instead, this article is complaining and giving copy to voices who are complaining that the system is not fast enough to let people who are suffering from depression and other forms of mental illness make the decision to off themselves. This is eugenics. This is Nazi German stuff, and it's right here in Canada. Kind of makes sense how we bring Nazis into Parliament and we celebrate them and give them standing ovation and we send arms, and on a per capita basis, we donate far more to the neo-Nazis that are running Ukraine right now. We donate far more than anybody else. Like, maybe people wouldn't be as depressed if our government's just collectively focused on the well-being and prosperity of Canadians instead of telling them that everything is bleak and that fantasies are real. We just had an election campaign, which blew my mind because Mark Carney went around the country and basically told everybody they were doomed if they voted for him. And the country overwhelmingly voted for him. And if you look at the recent polling, sure, the Liberals have seemed to top out. This seems to be the talking point in conservative circles. They topped out at 45%, man. And the NDP is still somehow, with the gong show of degeneracy, I would call it, that was the NDP convention, they're still riding it between 8 and 11%. What is happening to the mental state of this country? It's wild. Ontario is now ground zero for Canada's consumer insolvency surge. This from Better Dwelling. Good luck doing that here in Canada. Ontario consumer insolvencies hit highest level since 2010. And they're moving up. It's an up and to the right trajectory. I bet you we will test and try to make higher highs because we aren't really addressing the underlying problems. The government is still going to spend. They may not hit that $100 billion deficit that I've been talking about. Why? Because of the revenue that they're going to generate by taxing Alberta oil at a higher price. There will be more money coming into the federal government being robbed from Alberta, being robbed from Western Canada, and redistributed to all the welfare provinces on the other side of Manitoba. Canadian consumers are getting crushed by their epic debt, and Ontario is ground zero. The Office of the Superintendent of Bankruptcy data shows consumer insolvencies in the province surged in March, having outpaced national insolvency growth since 2019. Do you think April was better? Do you think May is better? Do you think June is better? Remember, we talked about all the renewals at higher interest rates that were coming up at the same time as the real estate market is in a full-throated collapse, especially in places like Brampton and Surrey, where the scams were endemic, where you had 20 people living to a house. Many of those people have now been kicked out of the country, had their student visas canceled or not reissued, TFWs that are being sent home. They're angry enough, these people, these Khalistanis, these nationals from another country, they're angry enough that some of them are refusing to leave. And it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out over the course of time. CBC asks, are Canadians reaching their breaking point? New data shows more people filing for insolvency. First 3 months of 26 saw the highest number of insolvencies since 2009. Remember, the great financial crisis was still kind of working itself out in 2009. We're just approaching halfway through 26. I told you back in December and November and October, somewhere back in there, that the real estate people that they were putting on TV and they were putting on the mainstream networks were telling everybody that the bottom is in and everything's going to get better. The bounce is in. It's going to happen. And I said, that is bollocks. We haven't even seen the worst of it yet. Well, 2026 is destined to be probably the worst of it, but I don't think 27 is going to be much better for anybody considering the state of the world right now. I mean, you look around, there's crisis after crisis. I'm fairly convinced that soon, if the Russians don't do something really big in Ukraine, as one step, they hit Odessa last night. Like, the people have to understand that all of Europe has come together to make a military manufacturing base to provide weapons that are now hitting Russia deep inside their territory. Not only are we having this disruption in the Strait of Hormuz, we're having refinery fires and production threatened all over the world, just random explosions and random fires targeting oil infrastructure. The very life's blood of the world is oil. The lifeblood, the thing that puts the food on your supermarket shelf is oil. This thing we demonize. This thing idiots, vegans, get in their plastic kayaks and they paddle their way out to oil platforms to protest oil. The very thing that they need to grow their vegetables. Without oil, there is nothing. I often like to think that agriculture is the basis of everything. You can't have cities without farms, but in the modern sense, you cannot have food, you cannot have crop without diesel and without gasoline and without combustible energy. This very thing that's under attack. It's not just the Hormuz disruption. Now Europe, after cutting itself off from the lifeblood of Russian energy, which they desperately need, has now built a manufacturing and military industrial complex, which is divided up amongst all the EU nations, and then they assemble the stuff in Ukraine and then fire it on the oil infrastructure in Russia. The point being, Russian restraint. They've had all of these red lines that NATO and Europe and the United States have walked across, whether it was deploying tanks, whether it was deploying aircraft. They've walked across all of these Russian red lines, and Russia has remained restrained. Probably because the Russians saw Trump coming in and they thought maybe they would get something different. Maybe there's still hope that something different is going to come out of the Trump administration vis-a-vis Ukraine and vis-a-vis Europe. But the fact of the matter is, the Europeans, who don't have any air defenses, who have no real capacity to stop drones launched against them, to stop missiles launched against them, some of the bases that are there do have those capacities, but a lot of these infrastructure sites that are part of the warfare manufacturing complex that they've set up to keep feeding Ukraine, the Russians can hit them anytime they want. And I think on the escalation ladder, first it'll be the Russians. They hit Odessa pretty hard, but I think they would have to do something before they hit Europe. They would have to hit Kyiv very hard, very hard. Try to cut the head of the snake off type hard. Oreshniks raining down from above. The Russians have been restrained, but in their restraint, they have a war economy. They're stockpiling vast quantities of weaponry. And I am very concerned that maybe the dark horse, the black horse that's coming up behind us is a Russian strike on Europe. And what that means, the Americans have already signaled that they would not respond with nuclear weapons. The French and the British cannot fire their nuclear weapons without the Americans being involved. I don't know if you know that. So it would trigger Article 5, but Europe is not prepared. Germany doesn't have an army. The French don't really have an army. The British don't have an army. They got the same problem that Canada has. How did we get here from insolvencies? We have so many problems right here at home. Blows my mind. Trump administration quits Canada-U.S. Advisory Board on Defense. Canada failed to make credible progress on defense spending commitments, says Pentagon official. You know, the tragedy is that at a time when Canada and the United States desperately need to work together and desperately need to focus on their own domestic issues and desperately need to focus on issues in this hemisphere, we're focusing on nonsense. We're focusing on fighting each other, and it kills me because there's no replacement for each other. There's no replacement for the neighbors on this continent. There's no replacement for what we could build together. Instead of building, we're destroying. We're destroying in Iran. We're destroying in Europe. We're destroying the relationship between each other. All these idiots who talk about unity and talk about rainbows and lollipops and getting together and loving, this is the liberal identity. Literally all they sow is destruction everywhere. They turn perfectly healthy people into people who are desperate for the government to allow them to die. They turn fantasy into reality. They basically say that, hey, if you want to be sterilized and, you know, you want to go through all this process, if your kids want to go through it, you have to go through it. You destroy them biologically as a human being. I have to be careful how I say it because the law is being rendered, I don't know, somewhere in all these tabs, is the BC Human Rights Tribunal ruling basically that, and in the ruling, they compare, they essentially say that if you don't honor a person's gender, if you don't honor the reality of their choice, you're basically committing an existential crime against them. And they've upheld this guy that's $750,000 fine because he doesn't want to believe in this gender nonsense. It's wild. And they actually, they make a reference and they do comparisons to Jesus and Christianity. In the ruling, they said that you can respect and honor a Christian's belief because Jesus exists outside themselves. So you don't have to believe in Jesus to respect that a Christian is what they are. But if you directly assault a person's chosen identity and you don't honor it, you're basically saying they don't exist. This is the decision that's coming down from these hyper-feminized human rights organizations in this country. All they do is create destruction, division, denial of reality. It's insane. It's chaos disguised as order. I'll do that one in the order. So here we have this article. Defense chief set to pitch options for massive troop surge as military strains under its own limits. Are they going to conscript Canadian boys and girls? Are they going to force them into military service? They have just celebrated I don't know if it's in this article, but it's something like 44,000 recruits. It's a 30-year all-time high for recruits, but it's not enough. A lot of those recruits are probably signing up because they think they're going to be fighting the Americans. They're not. They're going to be fighting Canadian citizens. This is going to be a military. This redesign is going to be a military that is very efficient. It's actually twofold. That if there's ever civil unrest or this idea of separation really caught on, then those troops would be deployed because we don't have any protections against military deployment in Canada. They can pretty much just do whatever they want, whenever they want. The Emergencies Act enables that. And even if the Emergencies Act, which suspends the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, is found to have wrongly done so and been invoked wrongly, no one's going to go to jail. The government can be found guilty of violating the sacred Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and nothing happens. So you can invoke the Emergencies Act, you can deploy the military on our streets, you can arrest and bang people up and detain them and violate their human rights. Nothing's going to happen to you because Canada is a fake country with no real human rights. A proposal that could see as many as 300,000 lightly trained citizen soldiers, public servants, was the idea. They're calling them citizen soldiers now, but they're looking to go into the bureaucracy. They're looking to arm people that work for the federal government, people that work at the Canada Revenue Agency, people that work in the public sector, civil servants, give them civilian training so that they can shoot and drive trucks. For what? They ain't going to go to war. They're calling it a civil defense force. It's about Canada. There's this other angle, too, that as they reduce temporary foreign workers, as they reduce student visas, as they look at canceling permanent residents who have acquired it and they maybe want to send them home, they're going to need a force to do that job because a lot of these people aren't going to leave voluntarily. You can see it in all the Khalistani protests. I guess you can't see it because the mainstream media never covers the fact that we have militant crime-fueled wings. Crime-fueled ethnic groups with their own militant political objectives that have nothing to do with Canada, marching, gathering, firing weapons in the street, carrying illegal weapons. Nothing ever happens to them. Maybe they've got a plan for dealing with that, and this is the plan. Maybe this is part of the plan, too. But my principal concern is whether they have to reach into the conscription bag or not. Man, it's pretty wild. To see Canada fall this far in my lifetime from being a respectable middle power with its own culture and its own cultural and ethnic identities. We were a multi-ethnic society. We were a multicultural society. But we had a core set of cultures and a core set of ethnicities that we celebrated, mainly, you know, Native American, English institutions, French. Like, we had this plurality. And we've fragmented it so much, and we've told the people for over 10 years that there is no core national identity, that there is no center, there is no fundamental basis institutionally or culturally that we rest on, that our whole mission in the world is to celebrate everybody else but have no identity of our own, to the point where we can't even run a military anymore. I come back to this, the CAF training platoon with 83% non-citizens devolved into ethnic infighting. An explosive internal CAF report reveals a Quebec officer platoon dominated by non-citizens descended into ethnic infighting, a lack of respect for women, peers, and abysmal graduation rates. Also, language barriers. I've covered before the tragedy of the fact that Canada is working to create a foreign legion, which is another side to this recruitment crisis, that we're going to hand out citizenships to people or hand out permanent residency to people from other countries that have military training. So you got to think about what this means. If you're bringing somebody in from Nigeria, or you're bringing somebody in from India, or you're bringing somebody in from some other country in the world who's had military training there, they may have already been deployed, say, along the Pakistan border, where it's routine for 10 or 20 soldiers to get killed or shot in little border skirmishes that don't even, they're not even a rounding error. They're statistically insignificant, but it happens all the time. You're going to bring people in from these foreign militaries that have different standards, that have different codes of conduct, that may have different morals from the society that they're living in. You're going to bring them in, and you're going to turn them loose in the Canadian military And you're going to bring them in from all of these different countries as if we don't have enough historical precedent to understand that multi-ethnic armies that don't speak a common language are not structurally cohesive. How valuable were the Romanians and the Bulgarians to the Germans in the 1940s? Or going back a little further, the catastrophic case of friendly fire, Battle of Caransebiz, my pronunciation is probably just terrible, 1788. I may not be able to pronounce the word properly, but this should be mandatory learning for anybody that wants to talk about global affairs, or I mean, even just a 20-minute high school lesson on this could inform people about the hazards of having a multi-ethnic army. It is often said that the worst enemy for someone is themselves. This was often true for the Austrians on September 21st, 1788, in Caransebiz, Romania. The incident occurred during the Austro-Turkish War, a period of intense conflict between the Habsburg monarchy and the Ottoman Empire. The Habsburgs sought to exploit Ottoman weaknesses, but were often hampered by internal issues and logistical challenges. However, the army was usually made up of a mosaic, a cultural mosaic, that included Austrian, Czech, German, French, Serbian, Croatian, Italian, and Polish soldiers, speaking different languages, having different cultural backgrounds, having ethnic rivalries. What could possibly go wrong? Well, a whole lot. It was a communication disaster. In effect, a battle broke out between themselves. The vanguard of the army, a squadron of hussars, crossed the Timiş River to scout for the presence of the Ottoman army. There was no sign of the Ottoman forces, but they encountered a group of gypsies who offered to sell them schnapps to the soldiers. The cavalrymen began drinking when, a little later, an infantry force crossed the river and also demanded the alcohol for themselves. The hussars, refused, and being drunk, hastily built fortifications around the perils. A heated argument followed, and a soldier fired a shot. Immediately, a battle broke out. During the clash, someone began yelling, "Tursi, Tursi, Turks, Turks." Panic ensued. The hussars and the infantry scattered, believing that an Ottoman attack was imminent. Austrians, Serbs, Croats, and Italians shouted in their languages, creating a chaotic scene. The situation worsened when some German officers, in an attempt to restore order, shouted, "Halt!" which the soldiers interpreted as "Allah, Allah." Oh my God, I can't believe I'm laughing at something so horrible. By the time the Ottomans showed up, there were 2,000 bodies littered in the field because of the chaos. It's actually that very same force of too much diversity that brought down the Ottoman Empire. At any rate, back to modern times, creating a foreign legion of foreign soldiers and handing out permanent residency to people who have never been here will just create a situation where, like the policing forces as well, you will have people that don't have a shared cultural or ethnic background, that don't have any relationship with the land, being used not to fight the Americans, that's how they're selling this thing, but to fight Canadian citizens, to fight the people of this country. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to put this all together, but you might have to be smarter than the average person who voted for the Liberal Party. Mark Carney campaigned and still talks about diminishing living standards. Talks about hard cuts. He's cutting 15% of the public sector. He's talking about how every single Canadian will have to belt tighten and things are going to get hard. And he got elected on that message. But when reality actually sinks in, because I think people are just somehow ignoring that. They're ignoring that message. They're ignoring the suffering that the man has promised to Canadian people. I mean, it's a political masterstroke. To be able to convey such a negative message, to convey such a sense of doom in a way that meets with political success. I mean, books should be written about how fantastically powerful the big red machine actually is to be able to pull that one off. But when reality sets in, the insolvencies keep climbing, the unaffordability of daily life keeps sinking its teeth into the Canadian public. When we start to see, as a result of all of these oil disruptions, when you start to see it in the price of lettuce and apples, when you start to see it in the price of produce, when people at the end of supply chains actually experience real and lasting impacts, well, you might have some civil unrest. People might wake up, because nothing wakes up better than hunger or homelessness. for people who aren't already homeless because of mental health issues or drug abuse. We're talking about normal people who won't be able to afford to live, will be facing abject poverty. They might be a little bit angry when they wake up. And the idea is, at least this is my guess, this is my opinion, you have to have a strong military, not to defend Canada against the dreaded Americans, or God forbid, against our strategic rival. Remember during the debate how Mark Carney actually said the quiet part out loud? He said that China is our greatest strategic threat. We ain't going to be fighting China. That is made very clear, even though they treat us like a vassal. It seems like the current leadership is more than happy with our vassal status to the Chinese. So we're not going to be fighting them. So who is this military going to be built for? Who's it going to be turned on? And my answer is civil disorder. It's there for civilian purposes. It's there to manage Canada. Because I honestly think the Freedom Convoy scared the powers that be. It wasn't so much what happened in Ottawa, though that was a big part of it. It was what happened at Coutts. The ability of the people to seize border points and cause serious and lasting economic harm that actually hurts the people in Ottawa, that was a wake-up call. If that had have kept expanding, if bridges kept getting shut down, if they had have started blockading the port spontaneously, if the people who had had enough kept going organically down that road, the Canadian government does not have the capacity to manage that crisis. They can't even manage one city, let alone all of the cities rising up at the same time. So what I'm thinking they're trying to do is correct that shortfall. They learned lessons in 2022, and they're going to apply it to keep a nice, solid boot on the Canadian throat. I'm Frank Vaughn. Enjoy your holiday.